This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Throughout the week on Michigan Radio, we've heard the voices of those speaking out for and against right to work. Yesterday on the program, we heard from UAW President Bob King. Today, we're talking with Tim Boss, a driving force in getting right to work passed in Michigan. Tim is neither a business owner nor a lawmaker. In fact, he was a union member for 17 years. He grew up in a union family, the son of an auto worker. He is a staunch supporter of right to work and believes that it means good things ahead for Michigan. Tim, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, Tim, give us your thoughts about really being on the front lines of history yesterday, part of a day that made history not only in Michigan but across America.
Well, I was very pleased to see what happened. When I got involved in this on April 14th of last year with about 35 other people from around the state, this was just a dream. And it's been a dream of many, many people, and we didn't really know if we would ever see it happen. But it was something that we felt very strongly about, and it didn't have anything to do with being against unions. We love unions, and we've all been in a situation, or most of us at least, have been in a situation where we work for a company that was a crappy company. Mm-hmm. And since you spend most of your waking hours working, if you're in an environment where you have a lousy boss or a lousy company taking advantage of you or treating you poorly, having someone to go to bat for you is really, really important. And we cherish that. We want to make sure that always stays healthy and available. On the other hand, we think that it has been very detrimental to the union cause and to workers in general by being forced to financially support, and when you think about it, a third party that is allowed to siphon off part of your earnings just in order for you to have the ability to continue working.
And now, the unions will say if the workers aren't happy, they can vote to decertify. 30%.
Yes,
so respond to that.
And that's true. The problem is that you have – this whole thing is all about power and money. And like I talked about, spending most of your waking hours in your place of employment, there's a tremendous amount of coercion, intimidation, things of that nature that goes on so that you are scared to death of going against the unions and letting it be known.
Now, you keep saying you. Has this happened to you?
Yes.
All right. So this is an experience.
Yes.
This was happening.
Yeah.
Was it a gradual path you traveled to go from being a union guy to one who realized that right to work needed to happen, in your view?
Yeah. As you said, I grew up in a UAW family, and I've had many conversations with my dad. He retired from General Motors as a test driver at the Proving Grounds in Milford, and I didn't get into the UAW until of 1978, and it was apparent immediately that things had changed considerably. They were much, much more politically motivated. They were much more militant, because I asked him about May Day protests and things of that nature, and it wasn't nearly as political. And so I am the type of person, because my dad was pretty much like a drill sergeant in the way he raised me. Work ethic is something that I have, a very strong work ethic, and I'm smart enough to know that if the company that's paying me isn't making a profit, I'm going to lose my job. And I take pride in my work. I take pride in craftsmanship and doing it right the first time. And many times, an apprentice pipe fitter in an apprentice program, I was told to slow down. You're walking too fast. I was told to quit working so fast. And the object was, or the way it was laid out was, if you can go ahead and do the work of two men, then there's no longer the need for two men. And that translates to a loss of power or a loss of money for the union leadership. And that didn't set real well with me. And because of that, I was kind of chastised on a regular basis. I've had my cars keyed. I've come out to, after working a 12-hour shift, come out and find that I got a flat tire, things of that nature. And this isn't all people, and it's not all unions. It's just some people that have this desire to impose their will on others.
So now that Michigan is a right-to-work state,
yes.
What do you hope, what do you feel personally, because you've been part of the fight, as you mm-hmm. say, since the beginning of last year. What do you think will come to Michigan because of all of this? What's your hope that will be the real benefits to Michigan for being now a right-to-work state?
You'll see manufacturers from around the world come into Michigan. They'll open their doors, and pretty quickly what will end up happening is there will be more jobs available than people. And so what ends up happening to try to counter that problem is manufacturers will offer elevated wages to attract workers. In addition to that, they'll have elevated wages to protect the workers that they have because they don't want to lose them. In addition to that, you'll have all kinds of support services companies that will come in to support the companies that do come here. You'll have companies like Boeing, which came into Michigan and seriously considered buying the Willow Run bomber plant, where they know that they don't have to worry about some strike or something that will put them out of business.
But let me ask you, and I know you've heard this in the arguments and mm-hmm. the debates, that the studies that show that right-to-work states trail non-right-to-work states in terms of worker incomes and the kind of jobs that are available. How do you answer that?
I'm glad you asked me that. You have to understand that everything is relative. And what I mean is if you're, say, here in southeastern Michigan or in lower Michigan and you're making $40,000 or $45,000 a year, you're able to make payments. You're not worried about missing a payment. You can make car repairs, or if the furnace goes out, you have that income and you do okay. You're not getting rich, but you're not anywhere near starvation or poverty. If you take that very same income of $40,000 or $45,000 a year and you transplant that income into a higher cost of living area, say Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, or New York City, you're on poverty levels. And the point I'm trying to make is that different areas of the country have lower or higher costs of living. The studies that you're referring to actually were pointed out by the Commerce Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics. And what they did was they analyzed all of the different states in the country. And they said, okay, the current 23 right-to-work states, how much is the net annual income? In other words, after you pay taxes and everything else, how much do you have left over? And in that study that was released last year, they found that the national average was, I forget what the number was, but the right-to-work state's annual net income for workers was about $1,000, almost $1,000 higher than the national average, and it was over $2,000 a year higher than forest union states. That being said, if you're making $15 an hour here and at the end of your paycheck you've only got, say, $300 left at the end of the month, but you're making $12 an hour down south in a right-to-work state, but you've got $700 left at the end of the month, are you making less money? You sure are.
Tim Boss, Michigan Freedom to Work. Thanks for speaking with us today on Stateside.
My pleasure.
Again, we are getting a lot of different views on our right to work here on Michigan Radio. You can find all of our coverage online. Just go to michiganradio.org.